Welcome to In the Studio with a 21st century perspective on history's greatest rock albums.
You're welcome.
Guitar up.
One, two, three.
Redbeard here. Today in the studio, it's the Aerosmith 7 million seller Pump.
As a matter of fact, the guy came in while we were recording or rehearsing this album, doing pre-production, and he mentioned that, well, you gotta have an angel, you gotta have a dude, and we threw him out. I think it's the type of thing, when you look at it like that, it turns into a business thing. Plus, it can tend to scare you half to death.
This song just snuck right up on me. When I first heard it, you know, I thought that it was just too funky and too rural and too down home to, you know, stand up to songs like Janie's Got a Gun and Young Lust, you know, and Elevator. But finally, you know, it just kept growing and growing, you know, it kept growing more of this delicious moss on it until by the end of the album, you know, it's the sleeper of the album.
Hi, this is Steven Tyler, and you're in the studio with the Bad Boys and Aerosmith.
Aerosmith's 10th studio album, Pump, was released in fall 1989, shipping platinum. The 10 songs were tied together with interludes of tribal chants, primitive instruments, and risque playlets. An intense, brooding album that spilled over with suppressed rage, Pump got Aerosmith the best reviews of their career. Rolling Stone magazine called Pump a masterpiece of sexual innuendo and hellacious guitar. Musician magazine said, Steven Tyler's lyrics have taken on a new dimension with a complete brain at his disposal, referring to his and the other band members' newly found sobriety then. The first taste from the Pump album came from the first single, Love in an Elevator. The lyrics were inspired by a hotel hot tub, a gaggle of girls, and the intrepid lead singer of Aerosmith, Steven Tyler, followed by Joe Perry.
Something happened down south with a couple of ladies, and we were carrying on in the elevator, and the door opened up, and there was a guy. It was in the lobby. I looked up, and it really did seem like a lifetime. I mean, everybody's gonna, and now since I wrote the song, everybody's done it, right? It's like, oh, you know, when it happened to me, it was, so it's funny.
Like an old seven.
Yeah. It's also the thing to do. I mean, go in an elevator, hit the stop button, and make it.
Meanwhile, when we just got back from Europe, and one of the girls, we were at the Weir office in London, and there was a set of stairs in an elevator, and she said, I'm not going in the elevator with you guys. She walked up the stairs.
Really? So now I got to live that one down. I mean, you know, but the reality is, when I wrote that song, I thought, there's 900 million people in New York City and every other big city that it takes an elevator every day to work. What are these guys fantasizing about? And can you imagine if I could get them to sing that and hum it in the elevator? Mm. Everybody's face takes on a different complexion, right?
Elevator.
Besides which, Confucius say, crowd of the elevator smell different to a midget. So keeping that all in mind, love in an elevator.
Second floor, hardware, children's wear, ladies' lingerie. Oh, good morning, Mr. Tyler. Going down.
Between us.
Smith from the 1989 blockbuster album Pump with Love in an Elevator. The rest of the album turned out to be all killer, no filler, just like Aerosmith's excellent preceding album, 1987's Permanent Vacation. Certain record company executives and even an outside co-writer wanted Aerosmith to stick to the recipe, but since the proof of the pudding is in the eating, Aerosmith insisted on making this next batch from scratch, according to singer Steven Tyler.
As a matter of fact, the guy came in while we were recording or rehearsing this album, doing pre-production, and he mentioned that, well, you gotta have an angel, you gotta have a dude, and we threw him out. I think it's the type of thing, when you look at it like that, it turns into a business thing. Plus, it can tend to scare you half to death. I didn't look at this album as... I mean, it was in there, and I was very scared, and it was a lot of pressure, and I complained about it. But when you go in every day and just play, you just jam, and you got somebody with a tape on. So when something happens, you go, hey, was the tape on? Did you get that? And you listen to it, and chances are, if you know someone has a tape on, you remember it. If there's no tape, you forget it. It's called Murphy's Law, you know? Mm. But that's what happened on this album, just like the last one, and it was something that, you know, we learned from the last album, was just going in there every day with the band and plugging away at songs. Before we knew it, we had a lot of good stuff. Enough good ideas to call that a song and say that's trash and throw it out, and just take all those little gemstones. It's like panning for gold. You pick those little nuggets out.
Like the preceding album, Permanent Vacation, Aerosmith recorded Pump at producer Bruce Fairbairn's studio in Vancouver, British Columbia. Fairbairn, who passed away in 1999, was a song-oriented veteran who had helped transform Bon Jovi to superstardom with the album Slippery When Wet. With producer Fairbairn setting the bar even higher and their newfound sobriety providing clarity, Aerosmith felt that they could realistically get a keeper every day, according to Joe Perry, Steven Tyler, and Tom Hamilton.
You kind of like make sure that you come up with something on a cassette so you can put it into the tape machine when you go home, so you let the wife know you've been at work. You know, you actually were there rehearsing. So, you know, every night we come home and we plug it in. And, you know, like you try and do that, and, you know, some of them are ideas that just last that day, and other times you end up, like, you know, with stuff that becomes a song, you know. But you got to, like, make sure you get something every day.
I mean, even if it sucks, you know, it's still something. You take all those little bit of somethings and you can start weaving yourself a really nice little tapestry of an album.
It's weird, you know, like, sometimes I listen to our finished album, or I'll listen to somebody else's finished album, and you actually get the idea that this whole thing that you're listening to happened in a moment. You know, that's kind of one of the things you feel when you're listening to an album. But it's so step by step. I mean, the way it starts out is so almost primitive, and the way material gets reworked and worked on, and the soul gets put into it and the finesse gets put into it, it's just a really long process.
Your head is empty, though there's something on your mind. You've been
Aerosmith guitarist Joe Perry employed some outside-the-box thinking to get the melodic inspiration by playing the song Ragdoll backwards to get the chord changes for that one. Don't get mad, get even. Up next, guitarist Brad Whitford and drummer Joey Kramer join Joe Perry, Steven Tyler, and Tom Hamilton here in the studio. Follow In the Studio on Facebook at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and you can get a whole lot more from Aerosmith and your other favorites at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with the guys from Aerosmith for Pump.
Hey, this is Joey Kramer.
And Joe Perry.
Tom Hamilton.
Brad Whitford.
And Steven Tyler, and you'll be listening to Radio Free Aerosmith.
Here in the studio.
Aerosmith's 1989 7 million seller, Pump. I'm Redbeard. As they had on the song Angel on the previous album, Permanent Vacation, Aerosmith's Joe Perry and Steven Tyler co-wrote with writer Desmond Child for the song What It Takes. Bass player Tom Hamilton says that ballads bring out the best in Steven Tyler's voice, and Joe Perry agrees.
Well, Steven's emotions are pretty powerful, and they don't usually stay quiet inside him. You know, he's usually pretty out with them. So songs like Dream On and Tell Me What It Takes are the kind of songs that really go right to your heart instead of, you know, to your groin. But they sneak down there too. This song just snuck right up on me. When I first heard it, you know, I thought that it was just too funky and too rural and too down home to, you know, stand up to songs like Janie's Got a Gun and Young Lust, you know, and Elevator. But finally, you know, it just kept growing and growing, you know, it kept growing more of this delicious moss on it until by the end of the album, you know, to me it's the sleeper of the album.
Actually, when we wrote that song, we wanted to do something totally opposite of Angel, you know. We wanted to make a small ballad, like a little ballad, because everybody's got their power pop thunder ballad now, you know what I mean? It's like standard operating procedure for every band with moose in their hair, you know? So what we did was something small and tight, and it sounded like real country and western kind of thing. And he was like drawling, and you know, like, here comes my girlfriend, yeah, you know, like that stuff. And I had my twangy guitar on, going, you know, like that stuff. And of course, Desmond was freaking out because he wanted to hear another Angel out of this, you know. But as we, you know, when the band played it, you know, we played a little more electric, you know. But we kept it small, and that's what it was supposed to be, just a small, like a ballad, like a real ballad.
There goes my old girlfriend, there's another diamond ring, and they're all losing eight night promises, I guess they don't mean a thing. So baby, what's the story, did you find another man? Tell me what it takes.
the top five single from the Pump album, What It Takes by Aerosmith. When conceptualizing the rockers for the album, Joe Perry described the sound for producer Bruce Fairbairn as, I quote, like a dinosaur eating cars. Here's Joe Perry.
We had this meeting with him, and we said, you know, like, which way do we want to go with this next record? And we said, well, we don't want to do another Permanent Vacation record. We don't want to do that. And he said, great. What are we going to do? Steven said, well, I want Strange Instruments. I want Zydeco instruments and, you know, just weird instruments. And we listed down, that's one of the things. And I wanted to do an album that sounded like the songs would sound great all on acoustic guitar, and there were songs, and they would just hold up like that.
Yeah,
well,
so
that's
when you
right.
come in with electronics, it sounds, it's
just
a kicker.
Better.
You know, it's a kicker.
So anyway, when Bruce said that, we said, okay, let's go. We're ready. We're ready for another go. You know?
Smith's Pump, That's the delightful rocker F-I-N-E Fine with Joey Kramer's stun grenade drumming and Tom Hamilton's bass, playfully emulating the horn parts. The very first song written by Steven Tyler and Joe Perry for this album was, we quote, about our adventures in body chemistry, according to Perry in the Walk This Way autobiography. But guitarist Brad Whitford can't take the song Monkey on My Back lightly.
I don't need to hear... I didn't need the song. I think Steven needed to sing those lyrics. I think more for Steven. I live with painful memories that I refuse to forget. A knot in my stomach, a dreadful fear for someone. When I saw Steven collapse on stage and I knew he was out. I didn't want to believe it, but I saw his foot twitching. Lots of moments like that I won't ever forget. I don't need to be reminded. I like the song now more for the groove that it's in. The lyrics, you know, yeah, I guess he had to put it there. But I have, you know, horrible memories. Lessons, hard learned lessons. I don't want to forget them. I won't forget them. But for me, they're there. They're real scary. Some really bad times that this band went through with drugs and alcohol almost took this band and a whole lot of other things away from me. And I'm dead serious when I think that's the most dangerous stuff out there for, you know, anybody. It's just bad news. I mean, it could take your whole life from you and a lot more.
recorded live in the studio. That's Aerosmith with The Blazing Monkey on My Back, the first song written for the 1989 Pump album. After a short break, Joe Perry, Steven Tyler, Tom Hamilton, and Brad Whitford all rejoin us on the other side for more of Aerosmith. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and there's, of course, a whole lot more at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with the guys from Aerosmith, their biggest album, Pump.
Hey, this is Joey Kramer.
And Joe Perry.
Tom Hamilton.
Brad Whitford.
And Steven Tyler, and you'll be listening to Radio Free Aerosmith.
Here in the studio.
Aerosmith's Pump album. I'm Redbeard. Aerosmith singer and lyricist Steven Tyler is notorious for seemingly having no filter between thought and expression. Always looks forward to ad-libbing when recording. Here's Steven.
I always have fun at the end of songs. It's like tapes rolling. You know, it's the F-all attitude. Because the song's over, you know, you know, your producer's going like this, giving you the cut sign, but that's when I have the fun. That's when the kid comes out. And so a lot of the stuff, I went in after hours and put down pilot vocals and just did my vocals late at night, like 12 o'clock, 11, 12, 1. And the stuff flew, I mean, for Elevator and all that stuff. And My Girl, the end of that. And it's just my way of having fun, letting it out. And then the next day you come back in and Joe would say, "That's great." I'd say, "Well, all right then, leave it." Again, it's like, you know, just fooling around.
Well, in the old days, again, they used to say, "Well, no, you shouldn't do that because it's not part of your sound." And a lot of that stuff, I mean, we would get out of the studio and then they would dick with it. You know, and CBS had their thoughts that they would put in before we were, that would occur in the mixing too. But a lot of the stuff, I mean, that Steven would want to try wasn't like supposedly part of our repertoire. But now it's, you know, I mean, he comes up with the stuff like that, and it's, Bruce says, "Okay," he goes, "give me another track," and he goes out and does it, and that's it. You know, it's not like anybody sits there and scripts it out or anything like that.
In the old days, I thought it was too reflective of a solidified whatever I thought Aerosmith was, and I was so wrong. I mean, Jack Douglas used to tell me I was wrong. I said, "Nah, it sounds too much like the Everly Brothers, forget it." And I would go out and try it, and Jack used it, but not as much as this stuff. This stuff, this album here is like, stuff flew. The front of Janie's Got a Gun is something that Tom came up with years ago.
Really?
And I tried to work in, which we tried to work into a song off on...
the last album, yeah, Permanent Vacation.
And it just didn't work. It didn't fly. What have you done? Very Indian, very... So I just fused that and threw it onto the front of Janie's Got a Gun, and it's like, it's just such a good thing. It's like, and nobody does that, you know, and I fool around with my voice all the time like that now.
You know,
and I like the outcome.
It's only tape, you know? I mean, hopefully any band that does a record can afford enough tape to try a few things. If you try something and it doesn't work, well, you go back and erase it and go over it, or you go on to another piece of tape. But, you know, sometimes people are afraid that if you try something, you're going to cross some kind of threshold from which you'll never return, you know?
But, the bliss abyss.
It's the sound of my gun. Oh, girl, dear, honey, what have you done? Oh, girl, oh, it's the sound. Tell me now, it's untrue.
just begun. Now everybody is on the run. What did her daddy do? It's Janie's last IOU. She had to take him down easy and put a bullet in his brain. She said, 'cause nobody believes me, the man was such a sleazy.
Aerosmith from the Pump album with the controversial theme of incest and child abuse in Janie's Got a Gun. The video, directed by David Fincher, who went on to do Alien 3, the movie 7, and The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. The video was groundbreaking, no doubt inspired by the cinematic interludes that connect many of the songs on the Pump album. First Steven, then Joe Perry explained.
It's like you listen to all these dance pop club dance mixes, you know, it's one guy coming up with a whole lot of different ideas. Some work, some don't. He puts a scrub noise and samples this and girls laughing backwards and it's coming up with ideas and trying things and hoping that they work. I mean, we tied the record in with a lot of interludes and things to make it so it would be interesting. And, you know, tighten it up. A lot of albums we've done in the past, we've been known for butting songs up so there's no dead air. Joe has a famous thing about it. If you took all the dead air that's...
No, it's like, I figure, you know, like people are paying for that time anyway. You're paying your good money for that, you know, so why not put some music on it to fill it in?
And plus, in Europe...
It bums me out, you know, like I listen to some of my old favorite albums and there's all this dead air in there and it's boring, you know what I mean? It's like...
But with this album, I think that those interludes are magic. It really ties it into an album you'd want to stick in your dashboard and listen to the whole thing all the way through because there's really no dead air on this album.
Take me to the other side.
That's Aerosmith from the Pump album with The Other Side, written by Steven Tyler and Vancouver-based songwriter Jim Vallon.
All we were doing was what we loved to do the best and had the best time doing, and that was play. And that's the reason why we still do what we do, because that's still the number one thing. If you ask Brad, you ask Tom, you ask anybody in this band what it is that they like to do in life better than anything else, whether it's driving $100,000 sports cars, building anything, it's playing. It's getting up on stage and getting on that as a band playing. And that's what it's all about. And that's what it's always been for us.
Studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio thanking my guests at the Guys in Aerosmith. Today's In the Studio is dedicated to the late producer Bruce Fairbairn. In the Studio was written and produced by yours truly for Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2014, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brune. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and visit inthestudio.net.